And now we will go to the last panel of the day, before lunch, last but not least. I will kindly ask Robert Wilkins from Rick Smith to come and moderate the panel on the acquisition of non-performing bank loans. I think that's a topic of very keen interest to a lot of industry participants. So thank you for being with us, and please take over.
Thank you, Nicholas. As Nicholas said, my name is Rob Wilkins. I'm a partner in the shipping group at Reed Smith, specializing in transactional shipping. I think in recent times, I think it's been mentioned in across a number of panels that we have seen a very significant amount of secondary trading in shipping debt. Whereas if you look back 2 or 3 years ago, there was very little trading of secondary debt in the shipping market. So it's new to a lot of us. We at Reed Smith have been involved in some very high-profile portfolio transactions, down to single loan transactions and follow-on restructurings of those transactions as well. We've seen a huge influx of private equity and funds interested in purchasing shipping debt, but that's not to exclude the banks' special situations groups who have also been very active. And I think we've got a great panel, a great cross spread today in the panel with Mikhail Zygrigakis from Bank of America. Mikhail has is Managing Director of Global Credit and Special Situations. He's specialized in debt trading for many years across a variety of different asset classes, previously of BarCap and Citigroup as well. And reportedly, Bank of America have been very active on the buy side in shipping debt transactions recently. So he'll have some very interesting views. We also have Robin Das, who's the founder of Old Partners. Old Partners are a boutique shipping firm focusing on shipping and finance transactional advice. And Robin is very qualified to advise, having been head of shipping at HSH for many years, and previously, prior to that, was head of European shipping at JP Morgan. And then we have Alex Tracy from Miller Buckfire. Alex is Managing Director and has been very active in restructuring shipping companies and capital raising within the shipping space. And last but not least, we have John at the end, John Howells from Capstan Capital Partners. John leads the shipping and shipping services desk in London and has previously spent 15 years at Lazard, and has been very active in recent times in advising private equity buyers of distressed shipping portfolios. So with that brief introduction, I think we'll start off with Robin, if we may. Robin, in recent times, European banks, in particular UK and German banks, have been very active in selling shipping loans. Can you tell the audience why this is the case, and why, and whether you think this is more likely to increase in 2014?
Well, I think the first point to make is that the activity has increased, but it's increased from a very small base. Someone recently gave me the statistic of about $5 billion of shipping loans that supposedly had traded in 2013. And even though that sounds like a very large number, if you compare it against some of the non-core shipping bank portfolios, it's actually not that big a number. So yes, I think it has increased, but maybe sort of also the question is, why has not more traded given the size of these non-core portfolios? I think the answer as to why more has traded than in previous years is relatively straightforward, which is that buyers have become a bit more optimistic, and the sellers, the banks, have potentially become a bit more pessimistic, which means that essentially the overlap between the bid and the offer is there, whereas previously it was not there. There are, of course, a whole variety of different banks, and their approaches are very, very different. And the ability for one bank who has a very small shipping loan portfolio and is willing to take the hit versus a sort of a very large portfolio and limited equity is, of course, quite different. But I think that's a sort of a different question altogether that we'll come to later.
And we've heard mention of the AQR, Assets Quality Review. Do you think in particular this is going to lead to more German banks looking to divest after the Asset Quality Review?
About 3 months ago, I was personally relatively sanguine on the Asset Quality Review in that it wasn't going to be very different people who are going to be doing that review versus the people that had been doing the reviewing at BaFin and a whole bunch of other institutions that look after banks around Europe. However, after speaking with a whole load of shipping bankers, I think the answer is there's pressure from two sides. One is the regulatory side and the asset quality review. There's also the pressure from the auditing side. And I think fundamentally the issue is that since 2009, banks have been telling their regulators and their auditors that shipping will recover. And that has been going on for a very long time now. So there's simply a certain amount of reticence amongst the auditors and the regulators to believe that story.
Thank you. John, if I can ask the next question to you. There's been very strong interest from banks and private equity hedge funds investing in shipping loans. What do you think drives this interest? First question. Second question, why is it more attractive than investing in the equity part?
I think the first thing to say is that a lot of these alternative asset investors do come from a distressed debt investing background, and that shipping provides a lot of the characteristics that they look for in investments. They look for cyclical industries, deep swings in value that allows them to try and benefit from the upside. Shipping provides asset backing, and that works two ways for them. One is that they like to have some sort of a view on the floor, on downside protection, which helps them price loans, and also it allows them to, particularly when they're taking on private loans, it allows them to repossess and to exit from the investment through the market. I think that when you asked a question about why shipping as opposed to other sectors, and a lot of these alternative asset investors will look across a whole range of sectors. But in particular, I think that the shipping sector is perhaps less well understood by them. It's something that is new for them. And they feel that in other sectors where there's a whole wall of money which is chasing investment opportunities, that pricing is much tighter and the potential for returns is not as great as in the shipping sector. A number of them have started looking at the shipping sector through public debt, which is perhaps easier to be traded, particularly in the US listed companies. And as those returns have been squeezed, they've now started to look at the at private debt. And taking advantage of portfolio sales is one way that they're able to access the market for this.
Thanks. A similar question to you, Alex. It was talked earlier about why invest in debt when the pricing is as we've seen it in recent times. Do you advise your clients to look more towards debt or to equity to get exposure to the shipping investments?
Well, we predominantly advise companies in these circumstances, but in certain instances we do advise lenders or other parties that are involved. I would just add one point to John's comments. In addition to the macro impact and what's going on in the macro environment as it relates to shipping, I think there's also a secondary driver, which is that there's generally a lack of distress in other segments, and that has raised this industry in particular, given where it is in the cycle, as an opportunity, and when these types of alternative asset managers compare opportunities and returns, this industry looks comparatively attractive, or at least has, over the past year or so. I think as more of the debt has traded, and I agree that it is off of a very low base, but certainly there was more activity in the second half of 13 and the early part of this year. I think that there has been an increase in some of the pricing of that debt, and you've seen the bid-ask narrow. And I think it's twofold. One, a lot of the lenders have seen the cycles over the years and haven't been willing to sell. I think the capital requirements that Goose mentioned on the prior panel and AQR are additional factors as well that will now, I think, drive some additional selling, while at the same time a lot of the alternative asset managers that have wanted to buy into the industry and have struggled because they haven't been able to meet a price that a seller was asking, they have actually moved further in the direction of the lenders and been willing to pay a premium to asset value or a greater premium to asset value than they previously were. And I think the reason why they do that is largely because they're looking at the loan that they're buying from one of two perspectives. It's either a yield perspective or the quote-unquote loan-to-own perspective. From a yield standpoint, if they're buying a loan that's trading in the 80s that matures in a couple years, that can generally be a relatively attractive yield play if that is what they're interested in. If it's a loan-to-own type of a play, then they're generally looking to create the asset at a certain level. And if they're buying at a low point in the cycle reasonably small premium to asset value, and their expectation is to exit at some point on an enterprise value basis, that generally is an attractive dynamic for them.
Thanks, Mikhail. I have worked on a number of these transactions from the legal side, and I'm always very interested to understand how you go about pricing loans. And having been active at looking at a number of these opportunities, can you maybe give some flavour about how you go about approaching which loans you're particularly interested in looking at and how you go about pricing them?
Yeah, sure. Look, unfortunately, there is no formula, and that's really the bad part of it. I mean, it's needless to say it varies by, you know, loan level categorization, right? You've got the performing stuff, you've got the stress stuff, and the distress stuff. So depending on each, you know, category, people have different required returns. And you will very often see that there are people that will only buy performing loans, or there are people that will only buy, you know, distressed loans. It is normal that, you know, a private equity fund does not have the return buckets to buy performing loans in the secondary market, although relative returns could theoretically be attractive. So one thing is, you know, what is the level of stress, and where do you really want to create a return? So I guess, you know, when you're looking at performing loans, you're probably going to look at where other loans get done in the primary market right now, you know, where else you could possibly deploy your capital, what are the other opportunities. And as you go down the, you know, stress spectrum, you know, distressed investors will require returns that are closer to, you know, private equity type of returns and total returns. I think other things we focus on a lot is obviously structure. Then, you know, who are you lending to? Are you lending to an asset? Are you lending to a corporate? Are you lending to a KG fund? You're going to see that there are people that are simply not interested in doing some type of business. So there are some people that would never buy a loan to a KG fund, for example. And then, obviously, you know, documentation, legal stuff are extremely important. This, your help has been really useful in a lot of this stuff. You know, there is just some documentation that is great and some documentation that has not been, you know, diligently done, and you kind of have to price that in. And I think as a last point, it was mentioned in the private equity panel, it was mentioned here before as well, when you talk about secondary investing, you have to keep in mind that for ourselves, capital is competing for deployment in whatever sector is really attractive. So investing in shipping could be attractive, but you know, there are other opportunities as well. You know, Spanish real estate could be attractive, Irish real estate could be attractive, and so on. And some sectors are easier to analyze. You know, a loan on a Spanish hotel is pretty easy to analyze. The hotel is there, it's not moving. You know, it may need some capex, but you know, you can do it up and you know what you really own. So I think it's quite important for people to remember that our capital is really competing for deployment. So we have to look at relative value as well.
Thanks.
Maybe one additional comment on the pricing is, if I look back 5 years ago when I was sitting in Hamburg at HSH Nordbank and I had a whole bunch of people approaching me to buy my shipping loan book at a big discount, people were looking to buy the loans for below the underlying asset value. And people are now paying premiums over the underlying asset value. So why is that? I think one of the issues that you have seen over the last, say, 12 to 18 months is a big shift in the type of money that is looking to invest in shipping. And I would call it maybe today more hedge fund in character. And therefore, what you're looking for is you're looking for things that are liquid, that you can get out of easily, that you understand, that you know. And one of the things that you can't really buy is a ship. So you can buy the ship at the asset value. But if you can't buy the ship, and instead you have to express your view in dry bulk through something that is, quote-unquote, more liquid or that you understand better, then suddenly you begin to understand how something that is publicly listed, that is large, that is a secondary loan, that is in distress, something like an Eagle Bulk or a Genco, gets bid up because there are not very many of those types of assets around. And I think you've seen quite a few of those large, obvious trades getting done. And now people are looking at the sort of the slightly less obvious ones, but that's fundamentally sort of one of the bits of pricing is, I think, simply competition between various buyers.
And do you think from the sell side that banks are taking proper account of kind of legal internal opportunity costs that go with having that portfolio on their books?
I think that's entirely driven by the bank. If you are a more Anglo-Saxon bank, then you look at your portfolio and you would like to get rid of it relatively quickly and you take into account of lots of opportunity costs. If you are a more long-term player and you're happy to sit on it, then you take a much more neutral view on these opportunity costs because you don't really see it as an opportunity cost. And then there's a whole variety of people who are in between those two extremes in the spectrum.
John, if I can ask you, we've seen a number of banks selling off individual loans or individual credits and others opting for selling on a portfolio basis, perhaps packaging non-performing and performing loans together. What influences a bank's selling strategy in divesting of loans?
Well, I think firstly, you have to distinguish between those loans that are performing and those loans that are non-performing. And if you have a package of non-performing loans, performing loans, which a bank is looking to exit, it's much simpler for them to do that on a portfolio package basis. It gives them scale. It lets them make a significant impact on the size of their portfolio, which they want to reduce. On the non-performing side, I think that you need to make a distinction between syndicated loans and bilateral loans. And it's very difficult to sell the syndicated loans on an individual basis, or more difficult, and these are typically tended to be packaged into portfolios. And as we've seen, the banks quite often will put together a mixture of performing loans and non-performing loans in order to have a blended package for the investors. I think for the distressed situations where there are bilateral loans, there's more optionality. We've seen recently on a transaction that we've been working on where a collection of distressed loans were put together on a portfolio of assets that were of a similar class. And you know, there was clearly a different strategy from the investors where they were looking to buy the loans in order to own the vessels afterwards. And this was approach that I think the bank took because they felt that the sector had perhaps more positive dynamics than some others, and they felt that the bidders would be looking to take the loans, repossess the vessels, and create a platform with which they could then benefit from the improvement in the markets over time.
And Mikhail, on the buy side, what's a buyer's preference? Do you like a big chunk of portfolio loans or individual opportunities?
I think it varies, to be honest, and it varies with what's really on offer. If you are looking at a bank that has got, you know, 2-3 assets to sell and just want to optimize their book effectively in shipping, you know, probably a portfolio is not the right way and to approach investors such as us. If you're looking at bigger size, more borrower groups, probably the portfolio is the right way to go about it. And what's interesting about the portfolio is that it requires a significant amount of upfront work from the banks. It requires a lot of preparation. You need to have the right information in place. You need to have the right process. And your process needs to be credible so that you attract, I think, the right bidders and people dedicate the amount of resources that's required to purchase this portfolio. If you've done that process right, I think you're going to get a lot of investor appetite. You're going to get the right competitive tension that will hopefully maximize your price. And I think it's going to be a process that's going to be predictable and not extremely time-consuming.
Okay, and Alex, I wanted to ask you, particularly with your restructuring experience, do you think it's better to sell a loan pre-amend and extend, or whether you should try and restructure it? What maximizes the resale of that, the pricing of that loan?
Well, I think usually it ends up there's some sort of an event that is on the horizon before a decision is made as to whether to sell a loan or to support the client and continue to work with the client to restructure that loan. I think that is really the biggest factor, is whether or not it's a client that the lender continues to support and whether or not they're willing to continue to provide capital, either new capital or extending the existing capital and giving the companies more room and supporting the management and the owner of the vessels. I think the decisions to sell are often either, one, just a loss of trust or support of the company, or two, a lack of clarity with regard to the outcome and concern about the process and whether or not they will, in fact, be able to continue as a lender, or whether, in the case of a non-performing loan, if there's covenant or liquidity issues, if they're going to then be in a position where they would become an equity holder, which is not a natural position for these lenders to be. So I think it's one, is it a client they want to continue to do business with and support, and two, what is the process going to look like, and is it something they're willing to hold at the end?
And Mikhail, yeah, I was going to say, can you add to that? Because I know we've had discussions on this in the past.
Sure. And Alex, I'd just add to your point that very often we see banks that are counterparties that say, you know, I'll restructure this loan, but I've already taken the view that post-restructuring I'm going to sell it. Now, whether it's, you know, 3 months out or 6 months out, you know, depending really on some provision management, I guess, and so on. What we see is the best way to achieve the best price is to sell before restructuring the loan. If you know you've taken the decision to exit this relationship within a short period of time, you have to let the real economic owner of the risk to take the decision on how to better restructure that relationship. And so we have seen that loans that are sold pre-restructuring on a like-for-like basis typically achieve better pricing, I would say.
I think the next question is probably to go along the panel. So we perhaps start with John at the end. What advice do you have for financial investors looking to buy into distressed shipping debt?
I think the financial investors firstly have to be very clear on their understanding of the fundamentals of the sector that they're looking to invest in. And generally, these are very smart funds. They do a lot of work. They do understand what they're looking for. And what we've seen is that different funds will have a strategy, a sector that they're targeted on, and where they want to invest, be that in the dry bulk or be that in the tanker or whatever. And secondly, and if I can talk perhaps a little bit more about the sort of loan-to-own strategy rather than the broader portfolio where we have a little bit more experience. It is then, how can you go from pricing and acquiring the loans into repossessing those vessels, making sure that you understand what the mechanisms are for doing that. Are you going to find that your vessels are tied up in legal processes for a couple of years before you can get your hands on them? And then, as importantly, to have a very clear strategy off of what are you going to do with those vessels? What are you going to do with that platform? Are you going to try and create a company that will manage and trade those vessels themselves? Are you going to give the operations and the technical management of the vessels to third parties? And lastly, to have a realistic view as to what is the exit strategy and what are the sorts of returns that you can get on exit. And for, particularly when you're buying distress vessels, majority of the return comes from the increase in asset value rather than the cash flow that is generated during the investment period. And investors need to really be realistic as to what can be achieved. We often say that the way that they should look at this is firstly to say what assumptions you have to make for you just to break even, for you not to lose money, and can you get comfortable with that? And then to look at what sort of returns you might get on a conservative set of assumptions, which may not be either what you think will happen or certainly where you would want the returns to be. But on that basis, if you can get comfortable, what sort of returns are you making? And thereafter, you can consider the upside. But I think, as everybody here in the audience knows, trying to predict what asset values of ships will be in 3, 4, 5 years' time is certainly no science, and probably not even an art.
Thanks. That's the same question to Alex.
Well, I think John hit on a lot of good points. Certainly, you need a macro view, and certainly you should focus on the downside protection. I would add to that I think the process, understanding the likely process, is important. If you're buying into a distressed loan, it's very important that you have an end game in mind and that you believe there's a likelihood that you can achieve that. And I think the ability to achieve that is predicated upon being a significant influencer and being sizable, as well as having like-minded participants in the group of lenders, to the extent it's a syndicate as opposed to a bilateral loan. So I would say that understanding how you think the process should play out, being able to come in with additional capital if required, are very important factors as well.
I'll sort of look at it from a slightly different perspective, which is that one of the most frequently asked questions of me is why is not more debt coming out of these various banks that have non-core shipping portfolios? And I think one of the reasons is because you do have a bit of a chicken and egg situation. Sort of, I speak to hedge funds that say, sort of, when is portfolio X going to be coming out of sort of bank Y? And I say, sort of, look, there is no portfolio X that the bank has identified and that they're going to take around the market. A lot of the lenders that are sitting on very large non-performing shipping loan portfolios spend all of their man hours and woman hours on dealing with the portfolio. They don't necessarily have very much time to do what maybe they should be doing, which is coming up with smart ways to reduce the portfolio. So, and a lot of these relatively simple ways in which you can acquire secondary shipping loans, the Eagle Bulks of this world, have gone. So how do you go about actually getting your hands on those, that next tier of shipping loans? And my advice to people is you need to do more work in cultivating those banks that have those portfolio. You need to go in, and if you have a chicken and egg situation, you need to do what I call create the chicken. You need to go in and you need to spend the time. You probably need to spend more time than you have on your hands to cultivate those sellers, figure out exactly what they can sell, what you want to buy, and try and create a bit of a tailor-made portfolio. Because sitting around waiting for things to come to you certainly will lead to something, but it may not lead to something that you want. So if you have the time and are willing to put in the effort, then I think you can go and create a chicken and create a portfolio. But that is also something that not very many people are doing today.
Thanks. I want to ask a slightly different question to you, Mikhail. What approach, given that you're already on the investment side, perhaps a more appropriate question for you is what approach should a borrower take? And obviously there will be a number of borrowers in the room that may be concerned about their particular loan being packaged up in a, it may be performing, it may be part performing, or it may be distressed. But what approach should a borrower take when it discovers that its loans have been subject of a transfer or prospective transfer?
I'd say an open approach, to be honest. When we purchase loans in the secondary market, I'd say it's quite common that the purchaser is received by the borrower with some skepticism. And it obviously it is natural because the borrower entered into this loan with a different number of banks. It was probably originated in with a different base case and with a different outlook. But most likely now things have changed either because it is a borrower-specific issue or it is because the bank strategy has changed, really. And what you often find is that the people that are investing in the secondary market have a genuine interest to be in this sector. So having an open dialogue with these guys, it is important. And probably they invested in this asset class or in this specific borrower because they can see that there is a way to work things out rather than a way to perhaps kick the can down the road or to perhaps make unreasonable requests. What is very interesting is people that invest in secondary loans, I would say, very often have more flexible capital and things that perhaps an original lending bank would not do. Possibly a secondary investor or purchaser of those loans would do. So people are much more open to, you know, a debt for equity swap or maybe a little bit more of a creative structure than simply an amend and extend or simply a covenant reset or simply a maturity extension. So I think picking up the phone really and getting to know these people, speaking to them, talking about strategy, finding a reasonable medium to long-term solution that works for both parties is possibly the right approach, in my view.
Any other comments from the panel on from the borrower perspective, how a borrower should approach the situation?
Well, I'll just add to that a bit. I think Miguel hit it right on the head. I think the best approach is an open approach and having a dialogue with the participants. I think it's important to understand not only what their motivations are, but also have a clear strategy and objective to the extent that it's a non-performing loan or potentially a non-performing loan, developing a strategy as to how you as the company or the management want to drive the process and the discussion is critical. Because it's very important for the company to take a leadership role in that process and not let something happen to you.
I would also add that often for the lender, they will understand that the owner can be doing the best job that's possible, but the industry is very difficult. Charter rates may be too low to generate the cash flows necessary to service the principal and interest on the debt. But if that owner is believed to be doing the best job possible, if he's transparent, if there's trust, the lender, be that the original lender or someone who buys those loans, is very likely to continue to support that borrower because it's unlikely that by taking the vessel away and putting it somewhere else, they will get much better returns on their investment. I think where the issues come up is when there is not full financial transparency, where there's not a willingness to discuss how the vessels are being maintained, how the value of the vessel and the security for the loan is being preserved, or how the vessels are being traded, there starts to become then a lack of trust, and that's where the difficulties happen.
Thank you. I see we're pretty much towards the end now, so it may be a good time to open it up to the audience for any questions for this esteemed panel. No questions at all? Okay, then just I'm sure people are very keen to get to their lunch, so I will stop there and say thank you very much to our panelists and to Nicholas for today's fantastic event. Thank you.